This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
All right, Producers Podcast, George Whittam, the guest, coming up in moments. Thanks so much for tuning in, as always. By the way, I think this is the fourth time I've tried to record the intro. Three of them were my fault. I mean, two of them were my fault. The third one, somebody stormed into my room. Anyway, three things to just address real fast, and then we'll get right to the interview. It's a longer two-part, but that is like the third thing I'm going to talk about, so I'll explain in a minute. The first thing, the show notes page for this episode, actually be pretty in-depth. I mean, I'm not going to be rambling on it and typing a lot necessarily, but there'll be a lot of links because I got George to talk about a ton of equipment and gear for VO and production talent. Home studio-wise, anything you might need or might need to think about, we talked about. Silence my cell phone. Anyway, so definitely check out the show notes page. There will be lots of links there, including some to get to George. Anyway, the second thing is upcoming guest. I have the team from Capital FM and Capital Networks and Capital Extra and Capital with cherries on top and Capital of the Capital. All those folks are going to be on a humongous roundtable. And that'll be next, and I got to still kind of lock in a time and a date with them, but I'm excited to do that. It could be, you know, wild, a lot of people at one time, but I think it should be very entertaining, an event, a big-time event interview, which leads me to number three, the direction of the podcast. Just so you know, I haven't put out quite as many episodes in the last few months as I would like to, but, you know, I'm getting older and there's, you know, I'm feeble. No, there's just a lot more responsibilities, and I want to make sure that the shows that I do have a ton of value. So instead of maybe trying to just knock out interviews and just get them out there, because there's plenty of places for people to get content. It's not like my podcast is a must-have or, you know, weekly or whatever. So I'm going to try and make the shows, while they might be fewer, bigger and, you know, more, as I said, event podcasts. So that's my goal. If you got beef with that or if you're cool with that, whatever, you know, I'd rather keep the quality up. And honestly, they'll be longer form. I'll spend time editing them to make them nice and clean. But there just might be a few less over the course of the year. But I'm going to continue rolling. Tons of great people and groups of people to speak with, and we'll keep doing that. So, let me actually say this. We get into the interview now. George Whittam, it is a two-parter, two longer parts, but as I said, I think they're definitely worth it, and if you're into this, you're going to enjoy it. But I did split it at a very specific point. I had it in my head before I started the interview with George. I wanted to make part two begin with the ISDN Source Connect et al. Talk. It's been a pretty big topic over the course of the last couple years, especially amongst VO talent. It's just a big issue, and people are really just curious, you know, what do you invest in? Because it is a bit of an investment. If you're a talent that wants to be available for these big, you know, studio sessions, especially network, you know, promo work, network VO, then you're going to have a need for something. So anyway, if you're interested in that, you're going to want to hit right to part two, because we dive right in, right out of the gate, and we talk very in-depth. And I play the idiot. I'm good at that. And so I try to just get the information as if I don't know anything. I know a little, but I was wrong on a few things. I learned something, and I think you will as well. So just to highlight that, part two is definitely that talk. And then I make George talk gear from all angles. The very beginner VO talent, mid-level, someone who wants to take the next step, and then, you know, your wily veterans that are just looking to just blow cash. We cover it all. So that's it. All right, here we go. The interview with the one, the only, George Whittam.
The Producers.
And the pleasure is mine today to be joined by George Whittam. George, right out of the gate, thank you so much for taking time out of what I know is a very, very busy schedule for you.
Oh, man, you're absolutely welcome. I'm always happy to make time to chat with you guys and share my world. And it's an honor and a privilege to do it. Thank you.
Yeah, we were actually just talking there a little bit about how you're sort of able to divide your time. Maybe we'll get into that structure of your life a little bit later in this podcast.
Sure.
But I think you have a pretty good philosophy on how, you know, there's sort of those people out there that are just always all about however they can earn the buck. You know, they ain't going to help you with anything until you're going to pay them. Then there's the people who you meet who are just sort of always ready to help. They don't really have a setup to their life. It's just like, whatever. And you seem to have found a nice middle ground with a great business, but also that guy that people can count on. So let's start with, I think we're going to bounce around to a lot of different areas of this business. Primarily, we're dealing in the voiceover world, of course, but you know, you're a studio engineer, you know the equipment, which can help everybody. So to the background, how did you get your start, I guess? Maybe take us all the way back, or some of the key moments in your life that have you as this expert role in the world of studio engineering.
You know, it's just you do all these things in your life and they lead up to where you are today, right? And it's really interesting how those things happen. But I mean, I started out recording myself on a reporter, a little Sony reporter recorder as a kid, blabbing away on the mic and just making up stories and recording the radio, recording anything. I just loved recording audio. I didn't know anything about the audio engineering industry at all until I was well into college, actually, funny enough. But I was into music as well, and I played music. So I had the music and the audio background and the interest all the way through school, as well as an interest in science and technology in general. In college, I went to Virginia Tech in electrical engineering, got accepted in the engineering school, proceeded to practically fail out of the engineering school, and thankfully discovered that Virginia Tech had a really great music school. And I and a recording studio, and I auditioned over the summer. I practiced my buns off all summer on my trumpet, which was my instrument. Got into the it wasn't a recording school, it was a music school, and got to study recording for the next 4 years as well as performance. Well, moving on, got out of college, started interning at a studio in Philly called Sigma Sound. At the same time, my dad was extremely supportive of me trying something on my own and saying, well, let's start a business. Let's start your own recording business. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. And so I tried to make a go of recording. I was doing Eldorado Recording Services. That was the name of my company, named after the RV, which was called the Eldorado. And I did that for a while, as well as I was working in my dad's music store, doing audio sales and doing some tech support and installing sound systems in aerobic studios. I mean, you name it. I have done it in audio. Mm-hmm. Then I got a connection with a radio station in Philadelphia, 94WYSP, which is now WIP,
sure. Legendary.
Yeah, which is now WIP, which is all sports. But they were the Howard Stern station at the time, and the Eagles football radio station. And interestingly, 9/11 happened, and I had just been interning with my friend who was the remote engineer for the Eagles football radio show. 9/11 happened. He said, I'm not traveling anymore. I can't stand it. I don't want to fly. A lot of people were freaking out about flying, if you remember. Sure enough, the next away came. I was on the road with the crew, and I was the engineer. So I got thrusted right into it. But that's where I got my taste for ISDN and learning how ISDN works and what it does. Fast forward, I got to work with a really great voice actor named Howard Parker. And boy, was I lucky. I mean, little did I know that I was going to be working with one of the most prolific and successful promo trailer voice actors, you know, alive today. Through that, it introduced me to the world of voiceover. And another long story later, 10 years later, here I am. I mean, I moved to LA 10 years ago, worked in the film production sound world, tried to make a go of that. But then Howard called me and said, hey, will you help me with my studio? And I said, sure. He referred me to his management company called Jason Marks Talent. And Jason started referring me out to some of his other talent. And that's exactly how this business was born. It wasn't something I seeked out at all. It was thrust in my lap like, well, these voiceover people need tech help. And there's nobody that focuses on that one thing. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I should be doing that. And, you know, really about 8 years ago is when I really focused on it. And that's just what I've been doing ever since. And it's been a completely word of mouth kind of business.
And vostudiotech.com is the website. That's kind of your main home base, although you have a presence on a lot of different places online. But vostudiotech.com. So you've already touched on that. What percentage of your Maybe we'll do it this way. I don't like to get specifics in numbers with people because it's not polite, but people are curious. So how about what percentage of your income comes from that work which you just described, being the, you know, studio engineer for voiceover artists?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just to be semantical about it, I'm a tech. I'm definitely a technician. I feel like an engineer is someone that gets to work hands-on with client talent and record. This is my life, my life's work now. Mm-hmm. It's all I do. It's been that way for going on over 6 years now. Yeah, I'm 100% focused in this industry.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I'll probably gush a little bit here and there throughout the interview, but you have many great qualities, but one is with a very peaceful, patient tone. You have an excellent style and just simply a way of explaining why you need this, why this works this way, why you don't need that. And it's just a real good quality you have. So I know I appreciate that.
Thanks a lot, man.
I imagine that's one of the reasons you're successful. Because I'll be honest, I take it from like my point of view, where I'm kind of a tech guy. You know, I'm a bit of a gearhead and a nerd when it comes to that stuff. But, you know, even like my girlfriend needs help with a computer and I instantly get impatient. You know, for whatever reason, I'm the guy that just instantly gets impatient. And so not only do you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the ability to purvey that knowledge. And I think, you know, you're at the top of that. So congratulations.
You know what they say? Never. Thank you. You know what they say? They say never, ever teach your spouse to fill in the blank. In this case, I taught my wife how to snowboard. And they always say never teach your wife or your spouse to ski. It's the worst experience. I taught her how to snowboard. Now, she hasn't gone in a couple of years for various reasons, but I mean, you know, so I learned early on, and there's so many that I know I blabbed on forever about my life story, but all these little things have led up to what I do now. I even taught science to grade school kids when I was in high school. So that teaching background and working with children as a high schooler myself also led to my ability to do this, just the patience.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's key.
I find myself really focusing on that. I've not been really disciplined lately, but I do meditate. I do lead somewhat of a slightly spiritual life in that I really try to make sure I stay centered and not get myself swinging wildly one way or the other, so that I can give people my focus and attention and give them the patience, because I know that's really what they need and they thrive on. There's a lot of us out there that are really smart with the tech. There's no shortage of tech geniuses, man, but the people like me, they really are a rare breed, and I know because I've been trying to find them to hire them. I want more of me's, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn, but it's hard to find. It's an interesting combination of skill.
Maybe from this, you know, we'll get you a little more exposure on that realm, and you'll get to talk to some people. Speaking of that, I do want to mention your Twitter right out of the gate in case people want to go find something to read while they're listening to this. Like I mentioned, your website, vostudiotech.com. If I knew how to speak properly, I would have just said vostudiotech.com. And then on Twitter, @, vostudiotech. So they can go, you're constantly pushing out some great information, links, products, tips, tricks, advice, all that stuff. You are the director of technology at Edge Studio. Is that correct? Did I get that title right? I know titles can be superfluous sometimes, but is that what you are?
Yeah, it's the first time in my entire life I've had a title at a business, a salary, all these things. It's bizarre to me, but that's what I've been doing since July last year. Yeah, director of technology for Edge Studios. But I still do all the same stuff, and the VO Studio Tech brand will persist for a while. It might go away, but for now, in for the foreseeable future, that's going to be how you find me on the web.
Yeah, it almost, I'm not going to tell you what they do, but they almost sort of act as an agent for you. I imagine they sort of gather all the stuff that comes in and help you manage your time better, so that might actually allow you to get to more people that way, working with them.
That is true. There's certainly a lot more to it than that, obviously. But I mean, that is in essence, in a way, kind of what's happening. That was a big part of it for me. I was an entrepreneur who was drowning in entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. The child is my life,
yeah.
Outside of what I do for the world of voiceover. And, you know, I've wanted to create time for her, and I couldn't do that and be an entrepreneur at the same time. And I had to let go of being self-employed and bring it under the umbrella of Edge. And they're the best possible company that I could have ever approached about it. They're just a wonderful organization based out of Midtown Manhattan in New York that has been just, it's been fantastic.
That's great.
Taken a huge amount of stress out of my life to have that support.
Yeah, that's great. Great people over there. I've featured a couple of different people and situations from them on my site. And then I also, the first time you and I interacted was on a 9.5 questions post I did with you. So people can go read up on that.
Yeah.
So anyway, we go way back. Oh, and I was on your, this is the next thing on my list, actually. Now, as we kind of veer away from, you know, your background, get more into the actual tech and the today stuff, your EWABS podcast I was on, you guys were very kind to ask me to be on there and talk pretty specifically in the world of radio imaging. Anyway, tell us about that podcast. It's you and Dan Leonard. I think you make a great team. And by the way, I'll say out of the gate, technologically speaking, I am like fire, and you guys are the microchip and everything else that came after fire. You have so many things going on with that podcast.
I'll tell you, when we conceived of the podcast, and we're actually coming up on our third anniversary in the next week or so.
Great.
We started it 3 years ago, March of 2011. And we didn't know what we wanted to do. We just knew that we wanted to share what we were doing. And that was, Dan and I were kvitzing on Skype about home studio stuff. People are doing it wrong. They're overthinking it. They're buying the wrong gear. They're, you know, whatever. Just fill in the blank. You know, their acoustics are bad. They don't understand soundproofing. Blah, blah, blah. We were just kvitzing about this all the time. And we were like, this could be a show. And it was sort of like a eureka moment. We were both kind of thinking and talking about Car Talk on NPR, you know?
Yep.
And we're like, wow, let's do Car Talk about home voiceover studios. I mean, talk about a narrow, you know, niche. But we came up with a concept, and within 1 month of concept to going to air, so to speak, that was it. It was about a month. And I mean, I already had most of the equipment in place. It was just a matter of figuring out the platform. And instead of going podcast, which we're doing today, I looked at it as like, oh man, podcast, that means we got to record this thing. Then I got to do post. Mm-hmm. I got to clean it up, edit it. I got to add in music. I ain't got time for that. You know, mm-hmm. And, I mean, maybe I do, maybe I don't. But, you know, I made it a conscious decision. Let's make this live. It's warts and all. Everybody knows it's live, and let's just do it. And we did it. And the platform I landed on was Ustream.
Yep.
And we were going, oh, let's just do audio. But I was like, well, we do have webcams. Let's turn on the webcam.
Ustream is the broadcast yourself video company. I mean, the site. It's video. I mean, you got to be video.
I mean, I was going to say, let's just have a logo on the screen or our pictures, because the video doesn't matter. But then when it came down to it, I was like, well, we have webcams. Well, we'll turn on the cameras. What the hell? So what really is more of a radio show feel, but with video, you know? And then now that's, you know, a pretty popular genre, I think, right? I mean, that's what a lot of people are doing.
And just to let people know, you mentioned sort of Car Talk. That's what you started with the idea of. It's East West Audio Body Shop. Sorry, auto.
That's how that goofy name came to be. Yeah, Dan came up with it. I didn't have enough brains in my head to refute it and say, that's too long, but... So it's East West Audio Body Shop. That's how that name came to be. And it's just a goofy play on words. So we just shortened it to EWABS. And EWABS.com is the home of the show. And we talk about, really now, we talk about the voiceover industry in general. We're really trying to branch out and not just be technical. So we're starting to do our own roundtables. We've been doing roundtables actually for a while, on audio tech specifically, but we're going to start doing roundtables on a lot of subjects that have to do with voiceover, from you know, from the talent end to the marketing end, and just the business in general. So we're really trying to make the show feel be more of a hub for the voiceover industry in general, not just be about tech. We have a vibrant chat room, which is why I think the live part of it has turned out to be such an important part of it, is the chat room is very involved. And I have the chat room window open during the show the entire time. Mm-hmm. And we're pulling questions from it and throwing them into our show note, you know, our show rundown, and answering them. And it's very interactive. But it's every Monday night, almost every Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And then it gets put up on YouTube, of course. And our YouTube channel is / EWABS Show.
Yeah, it's a great resource, and especially for people that really do like the in-depth, long-form, you know, not just a video component. Both of you are on screen. Your guests will come on screen. I know you're over there kind of live producing as you host, so you're bringing things in and out of the show, and then you guys throw to pre-produced bits. I do like Dan's, I'm forgetting the official name of it, but he does these pre-produced tech tips.
Tip of the week.
Just tip of the week, yeah. There's been a few of those that he's done a few that are kind of like those, duh, like, well, of course I could do it that way. But, you know, you just, a lot of things you might find on Lifehacker, you know, these things that are so obvious.
I love Life. I just brought that up on the show last week, actually, Lifehacker.
Okay. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Lifehacker is basically a daily site for me, and they do some interviews on there too. I'm forgetting the name of that too. They're in-depth interviews where they'll pick up kind of a giant in tech and then figure out exactly how we do it or how they do things. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
The point is, there's a lot of different elements to the show, so it's worth checking out, and then you have them archived.
I mean, from a technical standpoint, the true influence for me, because I am producing the show live, like you said, is twit.tv. So the Leo Laporte stuff, if anybody's familiar, if you're not, check it out. But that is, from a technical standpoint, the holy grail of live webcast, you know, video casting. And so I do everything I can do with the limited resources that I have to emulate that kind of production value. And we get pretty far with what we've got. But again, you know how it is. It's a delicate line between production value, but not letting the distractions of producing the show take away from the content of the show. It's a real delicate balance and something that's constantly being honed. I never thought I'd be a live host, but I've come to love it, and I like doing it now, and I can see myself, you know, doing it in other venues eventually, you know?
Yeah, that's great. So anyway, tell Dan I said hi, and thanks to him again.
Will do.
I keep smashing my mic. It's like I've never used a mic before. I wanted to talk about, first, a little bit about your daily routine and how you interact with people, and really it might give people a sense of what they can and maybe cannot get out of you. But I know, you know, you're a studio tech, and so I think at the most basic element, it's, I am a talent, I have a problem with my studio, I call George, he fixes. But what are some of the things you're doing with studios, with people, and how can you help people?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm the closest to being like an IT guy, right? But I'm like an IT guy for like 700 people. Mm. And
all individual, so 700 individual people, not
700,
in one company. Yeah.
Yeah, 700 individual businesses. Yeah. So it's an unbelievable process to keep it organized, and it's something that's taken me, you know, years of, you know, honing, and it still needs to be better. but time management is my one of my obsessions. You were talking about lifehacker.com, and there's a lot of time management things that they talk about, and you know, when you have a family, everything changes. And I've had a child, and my daughter just turned 5, and your priorities shift. And I was the guy 5, 6, 7 years ago who was up at all hours and would answer and be available for any incoming inquiry as it came. And, you know, for those that still do that, you know, that's great. And that's such a valuable thing for people to have. And, you know, some people really valuable being able to just call a guy and the guy picks up the phone. And, you know, I work with people that do that, and good for them. unfortunately, just it can't be me. I don't answer the phone unless you're either one of my current support members or you choose to ring me through my emergency bat phone extension.
The hotline.
I have a hotline. Like if you press 6, when you call that number, it will ring my cell phone 24 hours a day. Other times of the day, the phone goes, you know, I have it set up so that if you call outside of business hours, my phone doesn't ring. And, I mean, if anybody's going, oh my God, that's awesome. Grasshopper is what I use. Grasshopper.com is what I use to manage my phone.
Let me pause you here too. but because you did bring it up and it was a big bolded thing. I have a few of these more individual questions, but let me bring this one up. As far as time management goes, you just talked about Grasshopper, but I'm hoping there's a different answer too. If we have to break everything down and to figure out how, because everybody's busy, everybody has a lot of different kinds of tasks, and can you give me maybe one or two of the most important time management resources you use? And maybe it's things that everybody's heard of, but maybe it's something people haven't heard of.
Yeah, I think a lot of the tools that I've used for time management, maybe a lot of people haven't heard of. And I can only say that because it took me a long time to find these tools. Yeah. And one of them is that we use today to schedule this is called Schedule Once. Mm-hmm. And ScheduleOnce.com is a fantastic tool for allowing people to fill in slots in your calendar. And I know in certain parts of the industry where it's very fast-paced and on-demand, it's just not going to fit everybody's, workflow. But for me, where I don't really need to be as on-demand, I don't need, and again, unless it's an emergency phone call, and that's a different story, most of what I do is scheduled, you know, usually at least a day in advance. And for that, this system works beautifully. People can send me requests and say, I'd like to be able to work with you on the following, you know, they have to give you 3 options. And then they can choose up to 3 different options or more from the calendar.
Yep.
And they are seeing in real time my availability. They're not seeing what I actually have in my calendar, but they see where I have availability, and they're able to go and take a little paint roller looking thing and paint in where they're available.
Just to jump there, voice talents. I mean, you work with primarily voice talents. Have you found a lot of them employing this into their life and their schedules? Have they found success using this kind of a system?
Yeah, I mean, those are the voice actors out there who, of course, have a management or an agency. They're not going to obviously have to deal with this. But the rest of the working stiffs out there, you know, the regular, you know, folk who are not managed or represented and, you know, just working it. As long as your life isn't like on call, if you haven't created that monster for yourself, and if you have, I'm sorry. But if you really are a very much on call, you answer the phone and you do the job kind of guy, this may not work for you. But if you do schedule in a lot of jobs day in, day out with clients who are going to direct you by phone patch or ISDN or whatever, Source Connect, whatnot, then and you are able to schedule things in advance and have some control over your calendar, this is a really awesome tool, and it would allow your clients to fill in when they'd like to work with you next. And my clients, you know, a lot of this is about training your clients. So, you know, you as the provider have to train those who want to work with you to work efficiently with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something a lot of talent are really afraid to do because they feel like they've got to jump through every fiery hoop that's placed in front of them, because if they don't, they're not going to get another job. And I think it's a dangerous position to put yourself in.
That's interesting.
You get so beholden to that phone call and that crazy frenetic way that particular production company works. And it raises your blood pressure. It makes your health decline. You get stressed out. You get sick. All these things happen. And if you don't manage it, this is what happens, you know. So if you can present a tool to your customers that will make things more efficient for scheduling, try it. Give it a shot. Maybe this thing could work for some people. Do I know people using it right now? Honestly, I don't really, because a lot of my clients have been doing this for 10 to 20 years. So it's much harder for them to implement a new tool into their lives, you know? So I don't know anybody who is using it. But then, you know, I don't talk about this stuff publicly. This is one of the first times I've really, you know, shared this, you know, with the viewers or listeners. And it's not that I want to be secretive about it. It's just nobody's really asked me before. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm always happy to share my little life hacker ways of doing things because it's made my life be, I've had a better quality of life thanks to some of these tools.
Yeah, when I got the email or the notification, I thought it was really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. What else, maybe aside from time management, because I always liked it. I love, like, people I respect that are, you know, very tech savvy. I like to sometimes get a chance to just watch them work. You know, just watching them surf the internet, you might find more efficient ways to do things. Or watching them open programs on their computer or the way they interact with their OS, things like that. Are there any other things that you think you do that you might even do, dare I say, better than anyone else when it comes to being efficient and working with technology?
I'll take a few minutes and describe what I'm looking at this particular minute. So I've got two monitors. The left monitor has Skype and it's recording in Twisted Wave, my side of the conversation. The right monitor has, half of that monitor is a Chrome, Google Chrome web browser with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 27 tabs.
You must use a plugin for your tab manager. Do you have Tabman or something
on there? No, I just have 16 gigs of RAM.
Well, there's plugins you can get for Chrome, just so you know, that you can be, you know, bouncing from tab to tab and organizing your tabs pretty well.
I probably could do better, yeah. I have one thing called One Tab, and it will suck every tab into a web page immediately if I want a clean house.
Gotcha,
and
that's cool. Yep.
I can open up tabs again, which I will do from time to time. But I do use tabs, and because I every tab is basically just like another application.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm using the Mac, but I'm only running about 3 to 4 apps on the Mac, you know, regularly.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is really all virtual on the internet. And so, you know, I use a lot of tabs so I can jump around. In the Mac OS, I use favorites very heavily in the Finder. So, you know, that sidebar where it usually says all my files and then, you know, movies and pictures and all that.
Yeah.
I find that a lot of my clients do not take advantage of the favorites area, and I use it really heavily. So every folder on my system, that's something I go to at least once a week or more often, I add to that favorites list in Finder. And I find that really helps my workflow tremendously, just jumping from folder to folder to folder and moving things around.
Let me jump in real quick, because this is something I don't remember if I've ever even taken the time to see if it exists in Windows, but color coding your folders and color coding even
color coding
on the Mac. Do you use a lot of the color coding of things? Because I find it helps my workflow immensely when I can, you know, I use a system. Obviously, green means something. Mm-hmm. Blue means something.
You know, I've only really recently started playing with color coding. It's not just ever been a real solid part of my brain that can associate this with that. And my color coding, while it's there, it's not really, really, really solid, like consistent.
Yeah.
But where the color coding in my life is under control is Gmail.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like it looks like you're looking in a file folder with tabs of, you know, little colored tabs sticking out of the file drawer, you know, like by some crazy person. That's what my inbox looks like. I use a ton of labels in Gmail. They're all color coded so that if I need to see it, it really stands out. And since I have other people looking at my email on a daily basis now, you know, if I need to see it, it has my name on it. If I don't, it doesn't.
Do you use, speaking of Gmail, do you use multiple inboxes?
I am using, well, I've got a Gmail inbox for work for Edge, because I actually have I'm using Gmail for Edge email. And then I have a Gmail for my personal Gmail. And then I have a Gmail for eWabs for the show. And those are all three tabs that are open in my browser. That is the extent to which I use multiple inboxes. I am using the primary social promotions things in Gmail to filter out social emails and newsletter emails.
Yep.
And then I have a tremendous amount of filters to filter out newsletters. At any one time, if I look at my Gmail, let's say right now, I have 4,586 unread newsletters.
Gosh.
You know, I have in my social tab, I have 5,354 unread social emails. So that's how I maintain my sanity. I don't read every email that comes in. A lot of stuff gets filtered. But you know, it's a system that works pretty well for me. Yeah. I mean, this could be a show. I mean, we could do nothing but talk about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Google is such a huge part of life now, and, being efficient with life that, yeah, we could do multiple shows on just using Google products, just using Gmail.
I do a Google Calendar, Google Mail. Those are very absolutely integral parts of my life.
I think everybody should, at least if you're a big Gmail user and if you let it get out of control, like if you're the kind of person that basically just lets things sit in your inbox and that's how you'll remember to do them at some point, or you can turn it on in Labs. It's the multiple inboxes where you can basically, like I'm looking at my Gmail screen, the main inbox is on the left, kind of how everybody's used to it. Well, yeah. It shrunk that to half, and now on the right I have four other inboxes over on the right.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a good way to kind of, like you said, with tabs, keep control of things, and then you can you can go into the settings and multiple inboxes and then tell it exactly what you want where. So
for example, what's one of your other inboxes?
So for example, there's this system, I think I, again, saw it on Lifehacker for the first time, where you have to start being more diligent about starring or labeling your emails.
Mm-hmm.
So my top is simply my highest of importance follow-up emails. So I don't want to let them just sit there in my inbox, but I do want to make sure I remember to follow up. It might be, you know, current production jobs I have. Anyway, so all of those get the yellow star, and then you archive. So give something a yellow star, archive it, it pops up over there. Second one will be my low priority follow-up. I give everything a green checkbox for those, just because it...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are things that eventually I probably need to readdress, but it's nothing pressing.
No.
I also created one for all travel emails, because I always wanted to have access to those and not have to just let them sit in my... Because, you know, I'll book travel for 8 months from now, but I need to get back to it fast. You know, when the day comes. Anyway, that's just an addition to what you were saying.
You know, there's a million and one systems, and this has been years of evolution. The labeling thing.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine dragged me from Apple Mail to Gmail about 5 years ago. You know, and I was like, oh. And I haven't looked back.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. So yeah, once you come up with a system, stick with it and keep it evolving. And
I've said this in the past, and I have to imagine you say this as well, and I'm sort of transitioning topics here, but
fine.
Number one,
I'm the king of tangents, man.
Good.
I'm in lockstep with you, don't worry.
the whole don't be afraid of something. Like a lot of times, you know something is great. You've used it, you know, you're very savvy in the tech world. But you'll see people just sort of refuse to do things. And you know it's because they're like, look, why? I've been using Hotmail for 18 years. I don't want to try this other thing called Gmail. Who knows if it's good? I know it's going to be bad. I'm not going to bother. It'll take away all my time. How do you, I don't know what the right word is, and entice people to try new things and to not be afraid of new technologies, new systems, you know, new ways of doing
it. Persuade.
Persuade people. How do you persuade people, or at least nudge?
Yeah, I'm sensitive. I'm very careful about shoving people in one direction or another. One of my most overly used phrases is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I throw that around a lot with people. But if I am doing a one-on-one with somebody real time, you know, where I'm using TeamViewer and I see their screen. That's the gateway into me being able to affect change on their life. As soon as I see their desktop, immediately I know how much of a mess these people are from an organizational standpoint.
The amount of icons one has on one's desktop is directly correlated with the mess in your life.
And I am not a neat freak. If you look at my actual physical desk, there are at least 37 objects within arm's reach of me, right? I mean, it's cluttered. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But on the computer screen, the computer has to be overly organized because that stuff gets hidden away and lost in the shuffle so quickly. So if you don't have it organized, it's a mess. Yeah, I just a lady the other day, she had 308 files on the desktop. You can only see about 50 of those or 80. And the rest of them get stacked up in a virtual pile in the corner of the screen, and you just can't see anything. So immediately I started showing her how to move stuff into folders and how to organize. And so, you know, I will help people that are, if people are open to being helped, I will help move them into more organization. But, you know, it's hard because people are hiring me for a very focused specific need. Like they hire me for an hour. When you hire me the first time, I try to make you do one full hour right out of the gate because there are millions of little things I end up finding that people need help with that they didn't even know they needed and that I can help them with. But you know, my calls, my time that I spend with people, they are very, very focused. And part of that is because of what I charge. You know, it's not cheap. So when someone does hire me, I want to make sure that I am giving them exactly what it is that they want. But if they're open and flexible to receiving other kinds of guidance, or they have a little bit more budget or time to spend with me, I will definitely go there. And people tend to be pretty receptive to that. It's a very much a person-to-person scenario. Everybody is different, you know, as to what they want to learn and what they're open to learning new things.
Give me like the top three things that people will come to you in search of help for.
Okay. The first thing is that people just send me audio files through my sound check thing. It's a tab on my browser. A tab on my website, sure. VO Studio Tech. People will send me audio files for a free sound check, and I am still doing it for free. It gets backlogged, admittedly, sometimes up to a month, but I do this for free. So that's one thing that people come to me. They just want to know if their sound is good, and I do not evaluate for performance. I'm not a voice coach. I will not go there, but I will tell you if your mic proximity is wrong, if your acoustics could be tighter, if your noise floor could be lower, that kind of stuff. And I will give people very, very, you know, very focused, advice. Well, let's not say advice. I will give people notes on where the problems are, and then I will give them a path for, getting the problems resolved.
Hey, George, and, guess what I'm doing after we hang up?
Oh, well, you sending me a file?
I've never had you critique my setup, though I'm pretty confident in it. I will be sending you something. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, number two.
It's a great gateway to people getting to work with me because it is free, and I give them some really focused notes.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people are totally cold calls. I mean, I call them cold calls. People I've never heard of or been spoken to before. And I get audio files, and sometimes it's great, you know?
Yeah.
It's maybe one in three or one in four, maybe one in five times, but I get a file and I go, you know, this is great. You've obviously done your homework. You know, your sound quality is fantastic. I really have nothing to add. Maybe back away from the mic 2 inches. Maybe you're too close for my taste, but other than that, you know, you're great. So that happens. But other times it can be a total train wreck. It could be, hey, you're speaking into the mic on the laptop when you think you're actually using your studio mic. Maybe one in 10 that happens. It's all over the map.
But they can't hear that? You can't hear that?
They don't know what to listen. They don't know. They just don't know what to listen for. Wow. You know, they just don't have the ear training to understand when something's wrong. And maybe they're only listening to it back on a laptop. So something recorded with a laptop mic and played back on a laptop may not sound all that different from something recorded on a U87, you know? So, you know, their frames of references are way out of whack. So that I provide a frame of reference, you know, a very objective point of view. So that's one thing. So then from there, it's sort of the gateway into what else I do. So another really popular thing I do is virtual engineering. And then if somebody sends me an audio file and says, will you teach me how to master this so I can send an audio project to ACX for an audiobook production, and I want to know how to master this. So I'll say, all right, what software are you using? Okay, all right. And then I will do a video cast, a screencast, showing how I would master their audio. And I show them the whole process. I send them a template project, which has the audio processing in it, whether it's Pro Tools, Adobe Audition, Twisted Wave, those are the top three programs.
Yep.
And then they will know how to do it, hopefully, if I did my job. So that's another really popular one. And then the other one that's most popular really is just one-on-one consulting, you know, just people book an hour with me on the phone, Skype, whatever, and we talk about what their problems are, and I suggest as many solutions as possible in that 1 hour. And then they usually walk away after that first hour with a huge amount of homework, and then they can book 15 minutes up, you know, as little as 15 minutes after that to follow up and get more advice on things here and there. And those are the top three by far, most popular things that I help people with.
And another thing I've been fascinated, I think it's pretty interesting. Sometimes you have pictures, but you actually will on occasion travel to the talent, obviously the ones with enough money, but is that a fact?
Yeah, I mean, I have many clients locally in Los Angeles where I'm located that I work with in person. The ones that hire me the most for in-person support are, you know, generally the promo, trailer, commercial voice actors. But, you know, if you are someone that's taking this industry seriously and you're investing in your career and you don't want to waste a huge amount of time researching and screwing around with mic placement and all that, you know, have me come over. And I will get you straightened out very, very quickly. And so it can be a very efficient way to spend a few $100 if that's what you want to do. But I do come to New York every 3 months to the home base, you know, the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
And I do support with clients in New York every 3 months or so. And I make sure everybody knows I'm coming so they can book time with me. If you want to know when I'm coming, definitely get Twitter. Basically follow me on Twitter. We'll make sure you know. That's something I do in person as well. And I'm starting to get to go to more cities as things come up. I'll be in Atlanta in a couple weeks for that VoiceOver Atlanta conference.
Yep.
And I'll be available to help a few people in that for that time slot. I'll be at NAB in April. And so I'll be available to help people in Vegas on the ground there. So when I'm in a town, I always let people know I'm in that town so I can help people that want that one-on-one in person. But, man, I've gotten really good at doing this stuff remotely.
And
a lot of things that people would traditionally think they'd need me for in person, I can often help them remotely nowadays to do that.
The Producers.